The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is an opportunity for you to pose questions to us, and we will collectively answer your questions. Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis, taking care of patients, and she's a registered dietitian as well as possessing a master's degree in the field of nutrition. Welcome, Layla. How are you doing?
Hey, great, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. You survived Snowmageddon last week?
Yeah.
Well, we all got a day off out of it.
It's called a snore-easter.
Right, a snore-easter, right. Because it was, well, you know, if we had a day off in the office. We didn't tell, obviously, we couldn't even tell our employees to come in. Usually, we're pretty merciful when there's a big snowstorm. But I remember much bigger snowstorms in the past where... we've had to make the decision. The mayor and the governor didn't make the decision for us, but we discretion was a better part of valor. We shut the office down and maybe had one valiant person come in and man the telephones in case there were any emergencies.
Yeah.
So all worked out, and we're back at work, and things are back to normal. So I know before we have questions, I know you have a lot of questions, and I actually have a couple. I just wanted to share with you that there is a very interesting article and a beautiful graphic at Alliance for Natural Health. You know, I'm a board member of the Alliance for Natural Health. I'm going down there next month for the annual board meeting in Washington, D.C. And also, I will hopefully have a chance to visit some representatives of Congress to talk a little bit about protecting our rights to free access to supplements of our choice. So this is it's a great organization. I want to tell people to join it. Go to anh-usa.org, and there you'll find something that, hey, we've been talking about this for a long time, you know, the deficiencies of the food pyramid, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
What a disaster. And in fact, there was a great book called Death by Food Pyramid that we reviewed last year. And then they went to the food plate. And what's your take on the food plate?
The My Plate.
My Plate, right.
My
right.
Plate. Well, it's not a pyramid anymore, but they're pretty much espousing the same things as before. They're taking baby steps going in the right direction
right.
by saying, you know, limit the amount of sugars you take in, and healthier fats should be a consideration instead of being completely fat phobic. But, you know, I don't believe in a one-diet-fits-all for everybody and for public health, especially when the majority of our public is overweight and obese.
Exactly.
So it's not good advice.
Right. But what I have to say, though, go to A&H Food for Health Plate, and it's like the number 4, Food for Health. And they have a very interesting formulation there with a great graphic, and it really turns the food pyramid on its head. It suggests 25% high-protein food, including grass-fed meat. They really insist on grass-fed meat, wild-caught fish, and or legumes. But they even specify low lectin or lectin-free legumes so that, you know, for some people that's a problem. You know, certain beans create problems for them. They also suggest 10% high healthy fat foods. That would be lots of extra virgin olive oil, extra virgin coconut oil, nuts, seeds, avocados, butter, cheese, and organic eggs. And I'd be selective because some people are allergic to dairy or have problems with dairy. Grains, just 10%. I love it. You know,
that's terrific.
I mean, and not for everyone, because we have some people on no grains. They're on a paleo diet. But De-emphasis of grains going from 60% in the food pyramid to 10% is just fantastic. So they really flipped the food pyramid on its head. Grains 10%, and that could include brown rice, quinoa, and gluten-free gluten-free oats, because they're suggesting a gluten-free diet here. Not for everyone, but the vast majority of people can might benefit from that.
Yeah.
5% herbs, spices, and they include supplements in that because they're probably thinking phytonutrients, things like EGCG.
Terrific.
Yeah. And then it's actually somewhat of a plant-based thing because virtually half of this circle here, it's a pie chart, it consists of vegetables and fruit, with 40% unprocessed vegetables and 10% unprocessed fruit, but they emphasize the low-starch vegetables.
Good.
Which is great. So
that,
you know,
and I love that they emphasize not just eat your fruits and vegetables, but it's more vegetables than fruit.
Exactly.
It should be.
Because some people can just fruit, you know, you eat watermelon and, you know, have orange juice all day long. You're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, I like this. Check it out. A&H Food for Health. That's with the number 4, Food for Health plate. And go to anh-usa.org. to find out what they have to offer. And they'll love, you know, great content there. And sometimes they actually pick up on some of the content that I write. But they have some great resources, and they really will alert you to health issues of concern, because, you know, there's the politics of health.
It's a good idea to sign up for their alerts. I would advise anybody to sign up for their alerts.
And by the way, one of the alerts for the state of New York, and since we're in the state of New York, I'll talk about it. I talked about it on my radio show last week. There's a bill that's being proposed by a guy named Laval, who is Kenneth Laval, who I looked him up. He actually is a representative from a place that we hang out a lot on, the East End of Long Island. He's a state senator from the East End of Long Island, and he has this brilliant idea. He wants to have warning labels on all supplements that are sold in New York State that have not been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Okay?
That's ridiculous.
Now, why is that particular? Hey, you know, that's kind of reasonable, like consumer protection. If it's not been approved by the FDA, I mean, there should be a warning. Well, first of all, FDA doesn't approve any supplements.
Exactly. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He doesn't even know what he's talking about. So it's absurd on the face of it. It would create a great deal of confusion because every supplement would have a warning because no supplements are approved by the FDA.
It sounds like a scare tactic.
FDA has no purview over supplements either in pre-approval and, maybe in terms of if there's a danger, like an imminent danger of a harmful or dangerous supplement, they take it off the market. They can do that. But there's no pre-approval, pre-application. So that's totally bogus. And then it will create confusion. People will see these warning labels. If you're in 49 other states, you won't see the warning labels, so supplement manufacturers will be incumbent upon them to put warning labels on products that are just distributed in New York State with enormous costs and probably damaging their market share. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, the supplement industry employs a lot of people in the state of New York. Think of all the people who work in nutritional pharmacies, health food stores, who make supplements in the state. There's still, in spite of all the regulatory burdens, there's still some companies that valiantly are trying to do business in the state of New York. You know, most of the supplement companies are in Utah, where, you know, the regulations are a little more congenial to business. But we still have some free enterprise left in the state of New York. And this would quash it. So, idiotic idea. Go to the anh-usa.org. There's an action alert there. You can virtually copy their boilerplate letter to Senator Laval. I think he's going to be deluged with letters from angry constituents. And no way this is going to pass. You know, it's sort of like the State of the Union speech, like, let's have, you know, this and that and the other thing. And then, you know, you ask the people in Congress, they say, no way any of this is going to get passed. It was all done for, you know, effect, you know, like to, you know, sort of throw down the gauntlet and say, these are great ideas, and the Republicans are going to vote them down. Well, you know, Laval's proposal is not going to fly.
Yeah.
It just won't happen. But it's an example of a do-gooder mentality gone wild without any perusal of the facts of the matter, you know, which... Yeah. Obviously, Kenneth Laval and his staff are unfamiliar with the status of supplement regulation in the United States. And he wants to do
really
something. Which is scary.
Elected official not being aware. I mean, that's just not acceptable.
Yeah.
It's incompetence.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of incompetence in the New York State Legislature. And in fact, they've indicted the top guy. They're working their way down. You know, I think there may be a little bit of a house cleaning. If they got the top guy, they're surely. I don't know if he's going to take the fall for all the other people that he was involved in corruption with. I think he's going to start naming names, and maybe we'll see some changes in our state legislature. Anyway, enough editorial comment here. Let's see what questions we have.
Okay, we've got our first question from Gabriella. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, 4 years ago, my homocysteine was tested for the first time, and it was a 15.
Wow.
So my doctor told me to take B12 and trimethylglycine. It did come down, but only to about a 13 until I realized I should be taking the methylated forms of B12 and folate.
Yeah, right. Sounds good.
And now Gabriella says, on a recent test, my homocysteine was a 3.5. It was flagged as low.
Whoa, wait a minute.
She wants to know, is this a problem?
That is a foot. Congratulations. That's fantastic. Look, I rarely do I see a homocysteine that low.
That low,
it might mean that she could pull back a little bit on the use of those supplements. But, you know, homocysteines that are 15 and higher, they're notoriously hard to get below 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say to her, congratulations, you've managed to turn that problem around. Maybe your threshold should be keeping your homocysteine under 7. That would be a desirable goal. And I've heard some holistic doctors, some of whom are on the radio, saying everybody's homocysteine should be like a 4 or 5. I don't think so. I don't think. And first of all, it's 8. It's probably unattainable for the vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I'm not sure that it makes that much difference whether your homocysteine is a 4 or 5 or a 6 or 7. But if it's an 11, 12, or 15, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. Why? It's a problem because, you know, for listening audience less familiar with these subjects, homocysteine is a risk factor for stroke and dementia, possibly for coronary artery disease, although that has been challenged lately. But just because that's been challenged doesn't mean that homocysteine is unimportant. It certainly is a risk factor for dementia and stroke, maybe osteoporosis, maybe other conditions too.
That's right. So, congratulations to Gabriella. That's wonderful.
Wow, that blows me away.
Taking your methylated bees, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
And the product in question, the product we use is something called MethylGuard, which you can get at drhoffman.com. It incorporates all the methylated B vitamins. And if you want to concentrate just on your folate, there's methyl tetrahydrofolate or methylfolate. That's available as a single supplement. It's probably folate is the single most important methylating B vitamin, although the others can make a difference too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Gabriella, for your question.
Sure. I have one that's interesting. This is from Joel. He's a frequent questioner.
Uh-huh.
And he writes, he sends a link to me and says, is there anything of concern here? And the link says the following. Some notes on Jeffrey Bland.
Jeffrey Bland, the superior biochemist.
Right. Now, Jeffrey Bland, I recently interviewed him for one of these podcasts, and I really consider him a very important mentor because almost from the beginning of my career, I used to attend his lectures and listen to his audio tapes, and I found it inspiring and an education, and I think he's a really terrific scientist who also weds science to a conviction that natural orthomolecular approaches to correcting health problems are superior to the use of synthetic medications. But he takes a sane and savvy approach, and he's absolutely brilliant. Sometimes people admire other people's cars or houses.
Uh-huh.
I'm jealous of his brain.
It's wonderful to hear him lecture.
Yeah.
And getting into all that biochemistry. He's the founder, for our listeners who don't know, he's the founder of functional medicine.
Okay. So where are we going with this? We can talk about this, but
yeah.
This is a listing on QuackWatch, which purports to be your guide to quackery, health fraud, and intelligent decisions. Yeah, maybe I should sue them because they're talking about intelligent decisions. I'm talking about intelligent medicine here. They're talking intelligent decisions. Well, I don't know. All right. They didn't. Intelligent decisions is not trademarked. Intelligent medicine is. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So anyway, so what they're saying, they go through all this list of things. In 1991, the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, attacked Bland, and then they go on and on, page after page after page after page. And let me just say this. Half of what they say in QuackWatch is to report the actual qualifications of a person and put it in snarky language. Like, you know, he actually purports to show that there is such a thing as detoxification, and he purports to show that vitamins can cure diseases. And, yeah, you know, actually, I kind of agree with that position. You know, take away the snark, and, you know, those are pretty reasonable statements. So that's number one. Number two, just because the FTC has attacked your vitamin or supplement company doesn't mean you're a quack. The FTC has a record of attacking and being antagonistic to professional organizations, like the professional organization that I was once president of, the American College for Advancement of Medicine, got attacked by the Federal Trade Commission for claiming that chelation was beneficial for the heart. Well, it turns out that, a year or two ago, it turned out that a major multimillion-dollar study showed that chelation was beneficial to the heart. But the FTC claimed a few years before that we had no proof, and then, you know, so we were attacked by the... But merely being attacked by the government doesn't mean that you were doing something bad. So, for example, you know, being audited by the IRS, in another hypothetical example, doesn't mean that you are a bad person. You may belong to a an organization of a political stripe that the IRS doesn't currently like. But so, and bottom line, I actually made it to QuackWatch a few years ago.
Really?
But I'm disappointed to say that I'm no longer listed on Quack. I consider it a badge of honor for, you know, any holistic or alternative practitioner worth their salt should at some point be on QuackWatch. And if not, they're not making a lot of waves and they're not really having, you know, a lot of influence. So,
yeah.
But you know,
it's almost like saying any celebrity, if they've had, you know, if they've been mocked on Saturday Night Live, they've arrived.
Right, right. Well, but let me tell you what happened is I'm not as illustrious as Dr. Bland because he gets like page after page here. They had a mention of me, and it was a short mention of me, and it was inaccurate. What they said is that I was on the editorial board of a questionable publication. And it is true that I actually joined the editorial board of a publication. I don't remember. It's like 25 years ago. Uh-huh. That turned out, I was kind of disappointed. I felt there, you know, it was kind of a commercial rag where they were selling a lot of supplements, and I didn't like it, and I resigned. Mm-hmm. And so 5 or 8 years later, QuackWatch reported that I was on the editorial board. And I wrote him a letter, and I said, you better retract that. I demand a retraction because I have officially resigned. You will see that I am no longer on the editor. And they took it down. So my listing has disappeared on QuackWatch, which, I feel is, I guess I just don't make the grade anymore, you know?
QuackWatch should list itself on their own site. I mean, there's not much integrity there at all.
Well, for example, they challenge the validity of acupuncture, of all acupuncture.
Kidding.
They challenge the validity of chiropractic. They think that chiropractic is just a bunch of hocus pocus, you know, bunk. They question everything but mainstream orthodox prescription drug medicine. And, you know, it's unclear where they get their funding from, and investigations have been undertaken to see whether they are being in some way funneled money from the pharmaceutical, by big pharma or by medical.
I think QuackWatch is propaganda.
Yeah, very much
more
so.
More than anything,
And by the way,
It's meant to instill fear.
I don't issue unadulterated raves about everything in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. My field, there's some people who are doing wrong things. They're sometimes doing unethical things. There's sometimes elements of fraud and deceit and just, you know, bad science. And I'll call it out. But that does not mean that the whole field is without legitimacy, as Quackwatch alleges. So anyway, anything you read on Quackwatch, you have to look a person up.
About 28 grains of salt, anything you read on Quackwatch.
Yeah, if you look up any personage, you might find them on Quackwatch. You can say, well, that's interesting. Let me just see some countervailing opinions and then get a balanced view. Okay?
Yeah.
And I need to do something really splashy so I get back on Quackwatch. Maybe, you know, maybe these podcasts will eventually become popular enough that I'll get back on there. I don't know. I can only hope. I can only hope.
Yeah.
All right. So, we have time for one quick question for this podcast.
We've got one from Kevin. I've heard there's a possibility of an E. coli infection from a prostate biopsy. Is that true?
Okay. That's a really good question. And, you know, there's a couple concerns with prostate biopsies. Well, actually, many concerns with prostate biopsies. One, strangely enough, is that they'll find something like cancer.
Yeah.
Now, you may say, well, if there's cancer, good, they found it, and I'll get it out. The problem is that a lot of men, if you slice and dice their prostate enough, particularly past a certain age, it's very likely you'll find a few cancerous cells. Then you will be subject to treatment. Now you say, well, good, let's get it out. Let's cut it out. Let's burn it out. Let's freeze it out. Let's, you know, irradiate it, whatever. But at what cost and at what benefit? And there's some studies that suggest that early prostate cancer, especially in older men, when aggressively treated, leads to more disability and discomfort and pain and suffering and does not prolong life. Mm-hmm. And that's a concern. So that's number one. But you look, there's many cases where finding a prostate cancer can be life-saving. It's not always a waste of time to do that. Advanced or aggressive prostate cancers need to be treated. It's a tough call. Okay, so number one, they could find. Number two, there's the theoretical risk that you might, you're gouging around there, you might send some cancer cells into the circulation and spread the cancer. Mm-hmm. According to a recent study, that is not the case. Now, I haven't looked at the study in depth. I just looked at the headline and the summary, and I'm not sure that that study is the end-all on that subject, but a lot of people are afraid of biopsies, breast biopsies, prostate biopsies, because they're afraid that it'll just spread the cancer. And the answer to that is studies do not suggest that that's the case, although intuitively you might think you're disrupting the cells and the cells could travel. Mm. So that's number two. Number three, it's uncomfortable, okay, and that's a consideration. Number four, you can get a case of prostatitis afterwards, you know, either due to inflammation or due to bacterial contamination. And that's like with any surgical procedure, although it's relatively uncommon.
There is a possibility of an E. coli infection, would you say?
Yes, there is, but it's remote. And the other possibility, and I've had patients report this, you get your prostate biopsy and you go home and you go to the bathroom and blood comes out and it doesn't stop and you can have a hemorrhage from your urethra. And which is, you know, that's not the color of what's supposed to come out of there. And that can be a complication of a prostate, although an uncommon complication. But just you need to know that these procedures are not entirely innocuous. So you want a fairly high threshold of concern that it's really worth pursuing. The urologists that I respect are urologists who are willing to watch and monitor before undertaking a prostate biopsy, rather than doing a prostate biopsy, which could inure to their bottom line. You know, you can charge a fee. You also can maybe line up a patient for more aggressive prostate surgery if the test is positive. I really respect the urologists who are very restrained about doing biopsies. That's very ethical of them to spare men the potential dangers and hardships of associated with these biopsies.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Okay.
It's tough being a guy, but then again, it's tough being a gal, isn't it?
Sure.
We all have don't be envious. We all have our problems. All right, so this is a logical breakpoint, and okay. Give us a little bit of a preview of what we're going to hear about in part two.
To eat fats or not to eat fats, is that the question?
That is okay, to paraphrase the eminent bard. Mm-hmm. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the place you send your questions, and we'll answer more of them in just a moment here on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.